Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin'.
Welcome, everybody. It's good to have you with us. It is, can you believe it's November? November 14th? How is this possible? Anyway, this year has flown by, and we appreciate you being with us on each of the broadcasts. And I really do appreciate the many of you that are Facebook messaging me, emailing me, LinkedIn messages, however you get the message to me, and saying how much you're enjoying the broadcast. We heard from someone who is driving back from their second home. They listened to us over the weekend, and they said how much they enjoy the content. So it's good to have you join us each and every week. So thank you, the listeners, for making this possible, and also passing the word around to your friends in the industry, letting them know about the broadcast. I want to say a special thank you to all of our sponsors that are joining us. We got several new sponsors coming on in December. Talk about that here a little bit later in the program. But as we do each and every week, we're going to start off with an update on interest rates. Joe Farr of MBS Quote Line, what is going on today?
Well, it's been, it was pretty quiet early in the morning. We saw a little increase in MBS prices as word out of Europe was that the austerity measures were, as we know, were going to be difficult to implement. And you know, there's stories about people are going to scheduling to protest in Europe and in Greece and other places. So we spiked up but have come back down, and so we're back to just about where we ended the day on Thursday. Of course, Friday was a holiday, so there were no MBS prices out on Friday. It was a little bit strange. The stock market was open on Friday. That's not the strange thing. But what is strange is there was a real nice rally in stocks on Friday, and then this morning it didn't reverse, but ordinarily we've been seeing MBS prices move in the opposite direction to the stock market, and we didn't see that drop this morning that I'd kind of anticipated. So that was a nice thing. Yeah, yeah. So
yeah, good thing. Yeah.
On the day no economic news came out, it's just markets continuing to react to what's going on in Europe. Now the rest of this week is full of things. I'll get to that in just a minute. Last week was, again, not a lot of economic news in the U.S. and lots of news coming out of Europe, mostly Italy. Italy's prime minister resigned, and they have implemented a new leader. And I love this concept. They don't put politicians back in place. They put technocrats in there, and maybe we need a whole lot of technocrats, huh?
But that's the solution here.
The idea is that they may be more likely to employ the hard to do, you know, the hard politically to do things that need to get done and get their ships righted.
Yeah.
But you know, for the week there was a lot of movement up and down, but by the end of the week, there's MBS prices were pretty much unchanged. The Treasury auctions that came out last week were mixed. The 3-year was a strong auction early in the week, and the 10 and the 30-year were fairly weak auctions later in the week. So I don't know what that tells us, other than I guess it depends on what day the auction is held as to whether or not people are interested in more or less risky assets. But, this week, as I mentioned, there's going to be a lot going on from an economic perspective. But to be quite honest, I think everything's still going to focus on what's going on in Europe. And there's no real schedule to that. You know, it can happen at any given time, any headline that comes out. So you just have to be aware all the time of what's going on with MBS prices as they react to those events. But if you like things scheduled a little bit, let me give you some schedules here.
Let's get a schedule. Yeah.
Tomorrow, PPI and retail sales comes out. Yep. They come out at 8:30.
Eastern
and both
time?
Of those. All this is Eastern times, yeah.
Yep.
And then on Wednesday, CPI comes out. So Tuesday is PPI, Wednesday is CPI, and both of those, we don't expect to see much inflation coming through with growth being as slow as it is lately, but it's certainly going to be something the Fed's watching and on the lookout for. So Tuesday, PPI and retail sales both at 8:30. Wednesday, CPI at 8:30, and then industrial production comes out Wednesday. Also, it comes out a little later at 9:15 in the day. Thursday's housing starts in the Philly Fed, and so all those are significant events that can influence the market, but probably not to the degree that Europe's going to continue to be the influence.
Well, the Fed's expected, and is any expectations you have as a result of all this data, based on what you see and read, the tea leaves of the Feds?
Oh, geez, Dave, I wish I could predict that. It's just, it's a wild card.
It is. It really is. Yeah.
I don't expect inflation to be a concern at this point. We have seen inflation sort of steadily rise to the point that we're just about to where the Fed's comfortable, and the Fed has said we don't expect that it will rise much more. So look for that to not be a big issue, but who's to know what's going to come out of Europe?
Well, I got to tell you, I thought a lot about you when I was thinking about you tracking the financial markets. The Profit Doctor and I went and saw the movie Margin Call. It was a great movie, really gets into what goes on at Wall and the complexities of Wall Street. And then I was talking to one of my Wall Street friends, telling him about the movie. He said, if you think that one's good, you got to go watch the movie Too Big to Fail, and put on by HBO. So I watched two market-moving movies and fascinating information. But now you've given us a new term that were at Europe did, I guess, technocrat. I mean, I wonder if
technocrat.
Is that a good thing? So if you call someone a technocrat, is that a good thing or a negative thing?
Well, compare it to politician.
Yeah, compared to, if anything is above politician, anything. That's almost as bad as being a mortgage banker a few years ago. So anyway, Joe, thank you so much for bringing us an update of what's going on. We will be right back after this brief word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. Hey, what do you guys think? Is it the technocrat a good thing? Email us. Let us know your opinion. Alice, what are the technocrats and politicians doing in D.C.? What's the latest? Give us a CFPB update. That'd be a good place to start.
Oh, I'll start there, but I have to say, when I was listening to Joe talk and he said, let's get their ships righted, I was only half listening and I thought he said something else. So, so I hadn't moved to technocrat yet.
So we may call this the technocrat update here. So anyway, we'll stick with it. What is the legislative update? I know I'm looking at your notes here and I know there's some interesting stuff going on.
Well, we do have the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has issued their new HUD-1 and TIL combination form called the Settlement Disclosure. If you go take a look at it, I could see how the those of you who have to handle the closing side and create these forms are just kind of cringing at the thought of a three columns on page two of the HUD-1. So one of the versions actually dramatically changes page two by making a column for POC costs where, if you only got three or four fees, why do we need a whole column for it? So when I went in and took a look at the forms, I had some mixed comments about both of them. You can do that. You can go in and pick one of the forms and then that you like and vote for that one. But then if you like an aspect of the other version, you can make comments to that. So even though it kind of starts you out on a bright line trail, you can add plenty of comments to give your feedback about the forms. I think those of you on the closing side of this industry really need to take a good hard look at the forms. And those of you need to explain this stuff to consumers need to make sure that you understand them. It's going to be longer because they're going to be including more information about escrow accounts, negative amortization. Really, it's a much more comprehensive disclosure. My comment to it was make sure the title company explains it to the customer.
Oh, yeah.
Have them just sign it. So those are out for your review. Let's see, what else? Oh, also with the CFPB, Raj Date's been out there, you know, saying that the QM final rule is due to come out early next year. I don't know how you define early.
but why don't you say, who is Raj Date? He is the de facto chief
of
CFPB. Yep. I want to make sure those people go, Raj Date, who's that?
What? Right, not formally approved, but as of now,
not
the guy with the... You know, gets to at least guide the group of employees out there. So the final rule due out early next year. To me, that says first quarter, but to some people, that could be any time before June 30th. I don't know. Ultimately, where this is settled is two alternatives, which we've talked about on previous shows. So this isn't new that they're trying to decide: are we going to give the industry an all-out safe harbor? If you meet these X requirements, your loan is a qualified mortgage, and therefore you have determined the borrower has the ability to repay. Or are we going to establish more of a rebuttal presumption of compliance, which is not as strong as a safe harbor, has more criteria, but makes it a little looser to work with? And the industry seems to want bright lines, seems to be pushing for the safe harbor. And one report in National Mortgage News was saying it seems like that then people are going to be wanting, I mean, in the industry, stricter requirements. There would be a trade for that. I'm not so sure I'm in favor of that. You know, of trying to really draw some bright lines to make a true safe harbor against a lawsuit. I think a good lender can defend themselves. I'm not so sure if with good practices. Although people are nervous today, so maybe that's something we can talk about later in the show, how people feel about safe harbor or presumption of compliance. HARP is due out tomorrow, so watch. Their Fannie and Freddie FIFA's deadline was tomorrow, November 15th. Now, for those of you who aren't out hunting right now and actually listening to the show, go ahead and make sure you watch for that, and we'll know a little bit more about our HARP program. Do people take this time off in Texas, too?
Oh, they do. They do. I mean, the guys are dialing in. But they're listening on their cell phones in the deer blinds. I guarantee you they're listening.
Yeah, I think it's a national holiday week up north. So one side note also I want to make sure everyone's aware of is the Supreme Court has agreed to hear a fair housing case, Magner versus Gallagher. We're going to watch this for you. It's very unusual that we're going to have two cases heard by the Supreme Court that touch the mortgage industry. So we have the RESPA one I reported to you on a few weeks ago, and then now we have this Fair Housing Act case. No decisions yet. That just means they're going to be on the schedule. That could be months away. We'll keep you posted if those come about. And then last but not least, we are watching some bills. Senate Bill 1834, another bill for repairing the United States mortgage market. We're going to watch for the text to come out on that this week. It was just presented last week. And then a new Senate Bill, 1829, on the Truth in Lending Act. It's looking to amend the Truth in Lending Act to empower the states to set a maximum APR applicable to consumers. Like, we don't have enough going on at the federal level. Now they want to change it at the state level. Okay, this state has this APR, and this state has that APR. So, again, the text isn't out on that. We'll watch for it for you and keep an eye on that legislation for you. Right now, those are the news headlines I'm watching out in Congress. Of course, I think half of them are out hunting, too. So,
but I'm sure they're all listening, whether they're in a duck blind, deer blind, or whatever else, with their guns loaded. They are listening to the broadcast. I'm certain of it. Aren't you?
Yeah, I don't know. No shooting till tomorrow, though.
No shooting tomorrow, so they're oiling up, getting ready, loading up. It's kind of feels like a duck. If you're in the mortgage industry right now, you feel like you're flying in a low flying duck over a duck blind right now, getting shot at a little bit here by this. Thanks, Alice, so much for bringing us an update on all that's going on legislative. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lincoln.
I can't let go of this technocrat. So now I've got a new name for Andy Schell's profit doctor. It's called the Accounting-O-Crat.
What?
I don't know if that will work. Accounting-O-Crat. You know what I mean? If there's a technocrat, you know, there maybe there's an Accounting-O-Crat. So I'm going to play with this. We could do a lot of things, but that could end up slipping into some other familiar-sounding words. But let's continue with the profit doctor.
Well, Dave, that's better than geek, nerd, or dweeb.
Yes. For certain, we burned up all those words when we've talked about the kind. But you are a refreshing, refreshing exception to those that might be otherwise characterized as one of those less than flattering terms, because you are so personable and knowledgeable what's going on. So, Prophet Doctor, what do you have for us?
Well, Dave, you know, last week you and I and one of our other colleagues, Teresa, attended the Mayor Catalyst Conference here in Austin. It was really nice to not have to go anywhere to be at a conference. It's just right here. Austin's a great place for a convention. Great weather, really pretty resorts, big, nice resort, 4 golf courses. Everybody had a good time. So we were there, and, you know, some of the brightest people in the industry were there, actually from around the world. Some of the leading minds were there, and they were discussing how to find solutions or finding the yes in aspects of business, and that's what this segment of the Prophet Doctor is called, Dave. It's called Finding the Yes. So we're going to talk about finding the yes. So before we get to talking about the yes, just a quick update on the NMLS call report.
Oh, yeah.
Bear with me 1 second here while we do that, then we'll get to the good stuff. But people need to remember, for mortgage banks that are not Fannie Freddie Ginnie seller servicer issues, so if you're not selling directly to Fannie Freddie Ginnie, the first submission of the financial condition section of the new call report is going to be due soon. It hasn't been submitted yet. This first section of the report has already been submitted. The RMLA, we've been doing that quarterly, and we'll continue to do that quarterly. And that's the statistical data about origination activity. But the new report, the next report, the report that's never been submitted yet, is called the FC. It's called the NMLS FC, or the financial condition section of the call report. And this can be filed for the first time after the end of the year. Now, this new report, here's the tricky part. This new report requires extensive financial data that, for most companies, may not have been collected. It could be a real challenge, and people need to make certain that they've got their systems in place and the data captured correctly to be able to deal with this. Because under this new report, details from every closing of every single loan for all of 2011 is going to have to be collected and captured and held in the accounting system. Things like interim interest on every closed loan from the date it's closed until the date that it's purchased by the investor. That interest income that's earned by the mortgage company, that for many mortgage companies, they don't even count it separately. They just take whatever money the investor pays and says, oh, we're good. Well, a small portion of that money that comes in from the investor, a lot of it's gain on sale, part of it's going to be interim interest. And that money has to be pre-reported on the call report in a separate line item. And here's the scary part, Dave. They're going to come check. The Department of Labor, the IRS, the state regulatory agencies are all going to come look to see if we did it right. So we've got to get it right. We've got to do this right. So we've got to make sure our systems are built and the data is captured. And if we haven't done it yet, we've got to go back and look at every loan all year and make sure we've got the information pulled together correctly. And the other part of this, I talked to one group that said, well, we're just going to let our CPA deal with it. Well, the CPAs are not going to be watching this. The CPA cannot do this work for you because it impairs their independence. You've got to get the data. You've got to put the information together. You've got to file a report. Your auditor cannot do it. And for that matter, even if your auditor issues you a clean opinion, meaning there was no material misstatements that they identified, that doesn't mean your information is good enough for the NMLS call report. The standard for GAAP allows for estimations. In financial reporting, regulatory financial reporting, you can't do the same standard. So just letting people know, and we'll continue to, let's start planning now to get this right the first time, and don't submit it poorly and get in trouble, like having our state license suspended. We don't want that to happen.
Yep. Well, that's good. That's really a good warning. In fact, I tweeted on that this past week because I had a number of reporters that you and I both met with there at the conference, and I said one of the biggest areas of concern for us is the fact that people are not getting it right, may not get it right, that financial reports. We may talk more about that in the Hot Topics segment. This is one of the issues. It's one of the hot topics that we need to come back and focus on. I know you've got some other great stuff moving on in accounting, so let's go there.
Yeah, let's get to the good part, which is getting to yes in accounting. People go, getting to yes in accounting? What do you mean getting to yes? Well, okay, well, when we start talking about the role of accounting, most people think, what do they think about? They think, you know, count the cash, keep the books, make a bunch of reports that all get shredded, and we ended up killing a bunch of trees for no purpose. That's what people think about when they think about accounting, just killing a lot of trees, because accountants like
to
generate reports.
Well, not to mention a few green eye shades on those armbands you guys all wear.
Green eye shades, armbands, metal desks in the basement with the lights turned down.
That's right. Yeah, with that one bulb hanging down in the middle of the room. Yep. All right, go on. That's what we got, right?
And if a production person ever goes down, they never come back. They disappear. So now we have a vision of accounting. Let's talk about the reality of accounting. There's really more to it, and I know that you know that, and there really is more to it. And here's a couple of the key roles of accounting, and that's to generate complete and accurate financial statements. Well, we know that, but these financial statements should present data that's easy to be understood. It's in an easy-to-understand format. It's not just a bunch of numbers. There should also be a variance report. Now, a variance report is going to show the actual results compared to the budget. But what that assumes, Dave, that assumes there is a budget.
So you
got to have a budget to have a variance report to see how your actuals are different. So in order to have a budget, you've got to have a financial forecast that includes a cash flow forecast. Now, when we talk to people about budgets and forecasts, you know, their eyes glass over quickly and they roll back in their head and they stop listening after about two sentences. But here, think about this, and this is absolutely true. All Fortune 1000 companies have a financial forecast, and they have it for a reason. This is absolute fact. All big, successful companies have a financial forecast. All companies should have one. So if we're a mortgage company, mid-sized mortgage company, if we want to be successful, we've got to have a financial forecast that includes a cash flow forecast. It's really important. So and just a side note, and people are surprised by this, but it is possible to grow too fast and to run out of money. It's really possible in mortgage banking to grow too fast.
Yeah, absolutely it is. We've seen it happen.
Run out of money. And that, if you had a good cash flow forecast, that would help prevent that. An investor being slow to purchase your loans with a payroll time imminent can cause you to run out of cash. We worked with a number of folks to come up with strategies to overcome this. So, and the other thing that the accounting department does is help get your key performance indicators, your KPIs. Got to have your KPIs. Can't run a business without your KPIs. If we walk into an organization for a warehouse review or a counterparty risk assessment or whatever we're doing, we ask them, let me see your KPI report, and if they look at us and their eyes glass over again, we know, whoops, they don't have any KPIs. They're probably not running their business to the full extent that they should, because you got to have key performance indicators. So moving on, getting on to the whole point about yes, you know, beyond all this, really the key role of the accounting department, or, you know, more specifically, the head of accounting, the head of finance, the CFO, is find the profits. Really help the company get to the bottom line, make the bottom line bigger. Assess opportunities, given risk, consider risk, and look at new opportunities. And you hear me talk about this all the time. Apply an ROI assessment to all the alternatives. There may be 10 alternatives that all maybe look good. You got to go in and analyze it. You got to go look at it. You got to look at the ROI potential out of each one of them and predict what the bottom line is going to be, and then you'll know which one to go forward with. And in doing so, you need to create decision tools for management. Decision tools that help management make decisions about the pros and cons of the various alternatives that are out there, because not always can the CFO participate in every single decision, just the big ones. But you got to get decision tools out there so that people can review the information, and then whenever you do make an ROI assessment, you got to go back and look again. You got to periodically reassess your prior decisions, because what could happen? the variables could have changed. You got to make certain that it's still a valid decision. You got to validate your prior decisions regularly. You don't just make a decision once and stay doing it, because otherwise, if you were a buggy whip maker, you would have been out of business a long time ago. If you're a buggy whip maker, you got to learn to start making tires or wheels or engines. You got to progress with the changing times. So saying all this, Dave, it gets to the point is it's all much more about more than numbers. It's not just numbers. The accounting's role is to find solutions and find ways to increase profits and find ways to accomplish management's goals within the framework of the ROI. And so here's the most important point. Here's the point I'm driving at. Finding the yes must be within the ROI objective. We've got to find yes at the same time that we're doing it in ways that make money, because we know just having more volume and losing money on every loan, that's not enhancing ROI. We want volume that adds to the bottom line, not take away, and accounting should help figure that out. So here's the challenge. The challenge for many accountants is that oftentimes, and you know, Dave, I'm also a musician, so I have a creative bent to me, but a lot of times accountants are black and white. They just say no. It's easier, it's faster. They're not going to be wrong if they say no.
Yeah.
A good CFO doesn't just say no. A good CFO finds the path to yes with the ROI objective. The CFO's job is to find a way to say yes within the ROI objective. So that's what I think needs to happen. The CFO needs to create a collaborative environment with all the staff. And here's kind of the last point. The owners of the company need to create an environment where managers can get together and talk and look at decisions and look at objectives and look at the ROI standards and find a way to find success and not find blame. We see this so often. Managers get together, and the first thing they do is try to find who to blame. You need to find success. And we actually saw that in the movie we saw, Dave, on the marketing
call.
That's right. First thing they did is who they're going to blame. They had to give somebody's head on a platter.
Yeah.
So they picked who it was going to be.
Yeah.
So, you know, wrapping up here, as I come to a close, the CFO should look at the KPIs, assess the options, and help make informed recommendations so that management can move the company forward and find yes. And that is
was
the proper product for today, Dave.
Getting to yes. Now, I've got a question for Alice here. Alice, do you know how you can tell when you left the accounting department and you walked into the QC department?
No.
You don't? I mean, Jan Wetzel's right there. You must know the answer to this.
Well, I'm going to let you
say
the punchline.
I'm going to give you the answer. Here's the answer. In the accounting department, they have one bulb hanging from the ceiling. In the QC area, they have two bulbs hanging from the ceiling. There you go.
Oh.
They're both in the basement. All right. Okay, that was a bad joke. It's a bad attempt. Okay, all right. All right, we'll be right back after we'll talk. Thank you.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
I apologize to everybody. Maybe it started off with a technocrat, Joe. When you asked me about the technocrat, it put me in this goofy mood. One light bulb versus two. I apologize to all the accounts.
Dave, you had the joke right the first time. You said, how can you tell when you walk from the accounting department to the QC department? The answer is you can't.
That's maybe the reality. See, I can just hear Jan Wetzel cracking up in her office there listening to this. You guys are too much.
But there's a lot of times you look at some of the issues of what's going on in our industry, you know, it is because we have not paid. We pushed some of the areas that we need the most, hear the most from. We pushed them down into the basements, down in the stacks. I mean, we say that figuratively. I have yet to find an accounting department down in the basement. I'm sure there are a few, and that came from somewhere.
Oh, yeah, I've seen the HUMDA department's definitely in the basement.
Well, talking about being in the basement, we are going to get in talking about picking up some of the roundtable discussions. We hear from so many of you, the listeners, talking to us, saying we just really value you guys sitting around talking about the hot issues. So it's a roundtable discussion again this week, and we are going to pick up on some of the things and the themes that we were talking about in recent weeks. And we've kind of gotten into some areas that, quite frankly, didn't sound it sounds a little bit scary, to put it any way you look at it. And so you sit and wonder, well, how can I go about the business? What should we do? Joe, I want to start off with you and some of your comments. We were talking before the show briefly, and I know some people you know have we've talked a lot about the negative, what can happen, and it's the other side of the coin.
Well, let's, you know, number one, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago when we had Toni Moss on the show, she laid out a scenario that she and other very bright people are anticipating will happen, and that scenario included things like the fiat currency system being replaced by something else, and by that I mean each company's standing behind their own currency may no longer be accepted, the power shift from the West to the East, the lack of the use of the dollar, which will result in significant inflation here, the likely demise or the likely default of certainly of Greece and of countries in Europe following that. And as we summarize that, it seemed pretty dire, as you mentioned just before. So at the AmeriCatalyst Conference, I am very interested, and I even had my members of my family call in to say, so if that's going to happen, what do we do? I mean, that's the question. What do we do? What do people do with the information that these very bright people say are going to change the way we do things? What do they do with that planning for next year and the year after that and the year after that? What did you hear at the Catalyst Conference?
Well, I'm going to get into that, but I want to tell everybody, in every market, money is made. Every market. No matter how bad the markets are, it's just having the right strategy. So, and we did talk about that. Toni has a very we don't need to get into what Toni said. I mean, it was pretty clear on the radio program. If you haven't listened, go back and listen to it if you have the guts for it. But she's speaking it sincerely, and it is talking about a lot of things. A lot of people say, what is the fiat system? That may not be a term many are familiar with. It is the monetary system that is – we departed from a gold-backed system. We went into a fiat system, which is being backed by the good faith of the various countries. And she's concerned that she sees a reason why that might fail. Well, what will succeed? So that's why gold prices have been going so crazy, as you know, Joe. We talk about gold a lot, and or at different times on the program where that's going at. And so gold is a factor, and it's an indication of concern about all that area. So there is a strategy, though, and that's what I really want to get to. The most important thing that I heard, there was many, many good speakers, but the one that I just sat and took probably the most notice of is someone who's being very successful with counter-strategies. Counter-cyclical strategies. And his name is Kyle Bass. If you can Google him, go read the stuff that he's out there on. He's well published. He's out there and talks about it. And one of the things, Joe, that Kyle said that they're looking at and recommends everybody look at is investment property. So if you're in the mortgage business, there's two aspects. We have listeners that are in the mortgage business that are saying, okay, I've done all right in the industry. Where should I invest my money? Should I give some people and a good amount of it? There's nothing wrong with buying gold. But gold is not the end-all be-all. Many are suggesting we're in a bubble. There's no question about that. But how big will the bubble go before it'll burst? A lot of factors that go into that. And we're not going to get into that discussion. But what is the strategy you can mix in there other than buying gold? And it is, for those that the loan officers that are listening to this broadcast, originators that are listening to the broadcast, realtors, anyone, number one is you could tell your consumers they should be looking at buying rental property, single-family real estate.
And this is not your. This is coming from AmeriCatalyst. Is that what it was talking about, or is
yes,
this your
yes,
your
yes,
position? Okay, I just want
no,
to clarify for people.
No, very good
that,
distinction.
Yeah.
don't listen
who's
to my
who's making that recommendation,
advice.
Right?
Yeah, like one guy said, one of my friends said, Dave, I listen to every strong stock you go long in, and I short it, and I always make money. So what I'm saying is what Kyle Bass, a really smart guy, said about the investment. He said, Andy, jump in, because you were sitting in the audience. He said, find things that are working, that are making money. And Andy, you gave a soundbite as we were talking about this on the pre-program that was so good. Can you remember what that was and how you articulated it?
Well, you inspired me, though, Dave, is after you went on and talked about it, then I came back with my soundbite. But the bottom line of it was talking about acquiring real estate, commercial real estate, residential real estate, multifamily real estate, I think is more along the lines of what they were talking about. But
right.
It was talking about that assuming we retain a rule of law in the country, so it's not like possession is all that matters. If you've got a gun in a house, it's yours. But as long as there's a rule of law and ownership stays in place, which of course it will, I mean, can't imagine otherwise, but then people have to have a roof. There's an inelastic demand. People always have to have a place to live. And, you know, at some point, if you got a choice between a bar of gold or a place to live when it's 20 degrees and snowing outside, you're going to take the house.
You're going to go. Great point. Great point.
Same thing with
as
food and housing is the bottom of the Maslow's hierarchy. So start there, and gold is investment. That's way up higher. That's closer to self-actualization. So buy the stuff that people need.
That's really what Kyle was saying, Alice, is go focus on things what people need. People are going to need housing. You know, while he was talking, I was looking up where housing and, you know, having a place to live sat in the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And it was really interesting. Just it was making so much sense. So then you go to this, Joe. He says, well, should I be buying apartments or should I be buying single family? Lori Goodwin of Amherst put up a slide that the vast majority of people, the new renters going into the market, and especially those that owned a home form previously, almost always, the vast majority are going back into a single family home. Many of them, and this is happening in Las Vegas, but certainly across the country, if they get their home repossessed in one neighborhood, they go in that same neighborhood, they stay there, but they rent a home. And they're doing it at a cost basis far less than what they're oftentimes paying on that previous mortgage. So what does that mean for people and their strategy? Let's get to strategy time, because I'm a strategist. I love talking strategy. Number one strategy, if you are out there as a loan officer, first of all, tell realtors about this. This is a great message to deliver to your realtors that, you know what, you should be looking at, you know, any of the buyers that are out there that are, you know, owner-occupied, by all means, grab them, do what you can. But you should be doing seminars, Mr. Realtor, Mrs. Realtor, Ms. Realtor, on how to buy single-family residential properties and work with me. That would be a great strategy. And if you loan officers would bring that strategy out to the real estate community, that's great. Now the question goes, Dave, how much financing is out there on non-owner-occupied? There is financing out there. The product is available, and we'll be talking more about that. In fact, one of the new sponsors that's going to be starting Lickin' on Lending radio sponsor is New Penn Financial, who is going to be offering products or is offering products that are not non-agency products. So we're going to be talking about that in the future. We're going to have Bob Wexler on the radio program in December, on December 5th, talking about these new products. What's encouraging about that, folks, is about the time you think the whole world revolves around Fannie, Freddie, FHA, and VA, you can start looking outside the box because someone's going to fill in the void, that need that's there. So that's a long answer, Joe. I like Andy's short sound bites, but really one of the things should be, as a loan officer, they should be making sure they have non-owner-occupied financing. What should they be talking to the realtors about? Is single-family rentals, yes.
I know I always try to bring the discussion to the mortgage industry, but I guess this is a broader question. That is, did they assess the alternatives, meaning investments in stocks and putting the money in the bank and in CDs as being something that shouldn't be done as opposed to investing in real estate?
Well, they said the number one investment, I think the word was find things that are go down to the line of basic needs, human needs, things that people are going to have, housing being one of them. And then beyond that, investing in stocks that are providing that are meeting viable needs. The food industry is going to probably be still a strong industry because people are going to need housing and food. So you look for those. You look at how the products and goods and services are moved about, trucking, for example. So those kind of stocks are going to probably be a bit more insulated from the more speculative ones, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
But
what
the
about
reality
interest,
is
– inflation.
Go ahead.
And interest. What about inflation and interest rates? You know, the concern about the dollar, the thought was that if it were no longer the world currency, that we'd see pretty significant inflation following.
Yeah, that was probably what was most interesting. One of the speakers said, in an ugly contest, U.S. dollar is the least ugly. In other words, we're winning in an ugly – you get the gist of what I'm trying to say. The U.S. dollar, no matter – you look at all the currencies across the country, Greece being in the worst shape, Italy now in question. You look at the various currencies, the euro, and there is so much concern about that. There's reports of now what's going on in Japan. We talked briefly about that on the radio broadcast. That came out of the blue. We've been so focused on Europe, we have not been paying attention to Asia. But – Japan has got some real currency issues. So what this means, Joe, is the dollar, even though we have real issues here, the dollar is still going to be probably the currency of choice. And when there's a flight to quality, it's going to be a flight to the dollar. You may say, well, that's a good thing. And yes, short term, it is a good thing. It is. They're looking. Kyle Bass put a 2 to 3 year window on this thing. That he thinks that we're in a place where the dollar will look strong compared to other foreign currencies. The Forex will be the U.S. dollar preferred. It'll be the place for flight to quality. Also, mortgage-backed securities will be the flight to quality. Therefore, interest rates are going to continue to stay low because there's going to be a demand for mortgage-backed securities. And the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, specifically Jenny Mae. By the way, did you see the notice about how much money Jenny Mae made last year? Or was it last quarter? The report that just came out. It was like a lot of money. I was going to try to have that one out on my computer screen. So here's the whole deal. Interest rates are going to stay low. The dollar is going to stay in the place for flight to quality. We're looking pretty good as a country for a while. His concern, Kyle Bass and a couple of other people on the platform, their concern is this. It's going to lull policy setters, the technocrats, as you refer to them, as you heard them.
No, those are the politicians.
Those are politicians. It's going to lull the
technocrats will fix it.
Well, technocrats will fix it. You're right. But the politicians, he's concerned, are going to miss this. They're going to get lulled into a false sense of everything is okay here and home. It's not. The issues that Tony's talking about and others are talking about, the concerns, the glass half empty scenarios, those are real strong arguments. What's propping it up and giving us a potential for false security is the issues that the money is still going to flow here because of all, in an ugly contest, we're the least ugly. So does that answer the question, bring some more perspective to what we heard in?
Yeah, so I guess the logical question is if you were to go buy a rental property now, and it looks good for 3 years, is it still going to look good in five?
Yes, because going back to what Andy said, in the Maslow hierarchy of needs, housing is going to be such a critical need. We are not building new housing. It'll be real interesting. You said what was it Thursday? Housing starts come out. Housing starts. That number has not been very strong for some period of time. And so at some point in time, we will work through this inventory. Now, the markets, being the free markets as they are, will start building. But typically, by the time you get housing started again, and we're losing so much infrastructure around that, especially look at the timber industry, look at all the trades industry, we're losing a lot of these trades. How long is it going to take to restart that? And at some point in time, that rental property could go up in value. So will we have an inflationary environment at that point? Good question. The answer
inflationary environment in 3 years, owning being long real estate is going to be the place to go.
Because
you want to have fixed liabilities and variable assets.
Yep. And that I think go ahead, Alice, jump in.
No, I was just going to say, the catch to that 3 years down the road is all the shadow inventory on the foreclosure. So if you say, I want to get into the real estate market now, do I really think it's gone down as far as it can go? There's a lot of concern out there about the number of loans still on that edge of foreclosure. I think some of the last numbers I was just reading were, you know, in some aspects you can look at it, there's as many as 3 million or more loans that are just sitting being in foreclosure for over a year or in foreclosure or REO. I mean, the inventory's huge.
Yeah, there's almost 500 days now is loans that have defaulted and been in, that have gone without making a payment. It's now over 500 days. 480 the last time when I was in Huckabee a year and a half ago, it was just gone over like 430 some days. So now it's climbed up for 500 days. You shouldn't think about it. That's a long time. So to your point, Alice, there's a lot of inventory that's going to be coming into the market. At some point in time, that's going to get used up. And the other consensus, Joe, that was I saw as a positive is everyone seems to think we're at getting close to the bottom. And I mean, generally across the country. Now, there'll be pockets. Very likely we could see Las Vegas market continue to have deterioration in property values. But we're pretty close to the bottom, if not there. And we may have as much as 5% more erosion in property values across the country. But we're pretty close. But the question is, how long is the bottom of this valley before we start tripping heading up? We know this. We're going to have to work through the shadow inventory that Alice just mentions, number one. Number two, we're going to work through any new homes that are going to be starting to be built. That whole process will start up again, how long that'll take. And I think to the extent that could be frustrated, we could see that real estate being a tremendous investment, probably far greater than gold as far as a sustainable long-term investment.
Because it's not just appreciation potential, it's an annuity. That's the key. Real estate produces an annuity.
Yep. So Kyle Bass's recommendation, start looking at real estate. Is it positive? Yes. Does that mean the U.S. dollar's going, we're going to have issues here on the U.S. dollar, but it's still the place to go for quality, which means low rates, Joe. I think I walked away from this conference while I certainly heard Tony's concerns, and there's many others, saying there's some really rough days ahead, and there certainly is. But there's some real opportunities in there if you keep your heads up. Realize this. In every market, people have made money, up or down.
Well, and I was just going to add one quick thought. What I want to make sure all the listeners are clear on is we're talking about real estate that you're going to hold as an investment property, not that you're flipping.
Yes.
You know, this is not, you know, the idea of I'm going to buy a house for a deal and try and turn around and sell it and flip it. This is I'm in it for the long haul. As a landlord, which takes experience and, you know, get your KPIs on your being a landlord.
Guess what, Alice? It's Back to the Future. That's what a real estate was always supposed to be. We got into this absurd build, buy and flip, and it was absurd. We are back to the old rules. It's Back to the Future. And the good news is it's a great investment, and we can enjoy it for some time. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this brief break.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
Welcome back, everybody. It's good to have you be with us. Appreciate you passing the word around, telling others about the broadcast. We appreciate that. That's how this thing's growing as big as it is and has. It's growing virally. So anyway, let's talk about one thing Andy brought up briefly, and then I'm going to bounce over to QM, QRM real fast, Alice. But, folks, I cannot emphasize enough how serious it is that we get it right when it comes to the financial review. Andy, could you touch on that one more time? It's the financial condition section of the call report, which is the National Mortgage Licensing, and the fact that this is going into the states. I know, Alice, you've got some things you probably add to that as well, because this, people don't take this seriously. This could be your Waterloo. Andy, comment?
Yes. Yes, and so this report hasn't been filed yet for the non-Fannie Freddie seller servicer issues, and so the first report's coming up, and the report has content required to be presented to the regulators that is going to make the mortgage companies dig deeper, way deeper into their internal processes to capture the data correctly the first time, including interest on interim interest on loans closed until sold, and then loan held for sale and escrow liabilities and all this other stuff all has to be reported. And if it's not reported correctly, it's a regulatory violation, and regulatory violations could lead to suspension or revocation of state licenses. It's going to be looked at by the IRS and the Department of Labor in addition to the state regulators.
Yeah. Alice,
Andy,
go ahead, Joe.
I was going to ask, you had also mentioned in a prior show that you're going to need to categorize things in much more detail than you have in the past, as far as separating fees collected at closing and things like that, which if that's correct, means that you have to have started January 1 categorizing your revenue so that you can aggregate it on December 31.
That's exactly right.
Or whenever your first.
That's exactly right. And it's not just every loan, it's every payroll too, because you have to report payroll in a more detailed fashion than we've ever had to do before too. So this is a big deal. It's going to take going back and look at every single loan and every single payroll for the entire year. And if you wait until January or February or March to try to do this, you're going to be late. If the auditors know that you don't have the right information ready, they're not going to be able to finish the audit. It's going to mean your HUD filing's late, your state filing's late. It's a ticking time bomb out there that I'm worried for these companies, because people aren't taking it seriously because, you know, it's just a report. We'll just make something up and file it in, no problem. That is a real problem.
Could it be that, could it become a going concern issue if a CPA trying to issue an opinion were to know that you didn't have the ability to file this report?
They could qualify it in a couple of different ways. It's just got all kinds of ripple effects. And what's sad about it is that on Lickin' on Lending, on this show, we've been talking about this all year long, and the solution is straightforward, and the way to get this fixed is fairly easy to implement. It's going to be a lot of work at this point, but we could have been fixing it all year long. So the sooner you start, the sooner you'll have it done. You only have to do it one time, get it fixed right, capture the data correctly from then on, and it'll be easy thereafter. But you got to start now.
Andy, I have a question for you. You had mentioned something earlier in your spot that the CPA cannot do this for you, and you had referenced impairs their independence. Can you elaborate on that statement?
Sure, absolutely. When the auditors come in, they're going to look at the financial statements that are prepared by management, and then they're going to express an opinion about the financial statements that are prepared by management. The thing in auditing is that the financials are the company's, the opinions are the CPA's. In order for the CPA to get enough information to file the NMLS call report correctly, the CPA would have to become the bookkeeper. And once they become the bookkeeper and start having to find all the entries and post everything, then they would lose their independence because they can't audit their own work. So the CPA, your auditor, can't come in and fix this all, because then they're not going to be your auditor anymore, because they'll be auditing their own work.
Thank you.
Interesting. Yeah, it's important everyone realize that. You go, well, I'll just talk to my CPA about it. If it's your auditing CPA firm, then they're conflicted in that. So then you pick up the phone and call Andy Schell. He's got it. He just did a webinar on it, and it's very, very important. You can go to the MBA Campus MBA, download and listen to it, I believe, or pay attention. We'll be doing it again. I know there'll be MBA will have you back to be doing that one on a regular basis. In fact, Andy, you're heading out to Phoenix, Scottsdale specifically, this week, and talking to a whole bunch of CPAs and the CFOs at mortgage companies from across the country. Real quick on that.
Yeah, we're Teresa Casillas and I are going to be speaking at the Accounting, Financial Management, and Tax Workshop through the Mortgage Bankers Association in Phoenix, and we're going to be talking about counterparty risk, pass-through counterparty risk, and the various elements that are affected in a counterparty risk assessment, so that the mortgage banks can have a better understanding about what to expect when the various groups come in to perform these assessments. And if you can pass a counterparty risk assessment, that's just the first step in being able to deal with an NMLS audit.
Well, it's important. If anyone's out there thinking about going to the conference, go. I just want to put a word out there. And if you're going, look up Andy and Teresa. They'll be there at the conference. Alice, I want to get into the QM, QRM. You're talking about Safe Harbor in your segment a bit. I want to get into that just briefly, make sure people understand, you know, what are the implications of this? I mean, it looks like the rumors have been that QRM is probably going to get kicked to the curb, get it rewritten. Any more words on that?
Oh, on the QRM? So the QM, qualified mortgage, seems to definitely be the first step, right?
That is the first step, and that is coming up.
Yeah. Right. That's what we're talking. And then the QRM, the qualified residential mortgage, the idea of the risk retention component,
right,
that's the one, as you're referencing, is getting kicked around a lot. I don't know if it's going to get kicked to the curb. I really could never begin to predict. I think on a future show here, if not next week, the week after, we're going to have Glenn Corso on, so maybe Glenn can talk more to where that might be sitting. But the discussion at first, it's going to be coming out soon, is on QM. So the five things, I guess, that legal safe harbor is that the loan doesn't include negative amortization, doesn't have interest-only payments or balloon, or is over a 30-year loan. So that's item number one. That total points and fees generally don't exceed 3% of the total loan amount. That income or assets of the borrower have been verified. When there's underwriting, it's based on the maximum interest rate in the first 5 years and a payment that is fully amortized, a fully amortized payment, and takes into account any mortgage-related obligations, so seconds and so forth. So those are kind of the criteria that would be in the legal safe harbor, and we're trying to get some definitions to go with each of those. So that's where you hear people say, oh, my gosh, they're going to limit my compensation to 3 points. Well, no, you can not be in the QM safe harbor and still originate the loan, but to be in the safe harbor would be that points cap.
Yep, good point. Really good point. Looking at the clock, we've just got a few minutes left before we got to hear the drum rolls and go exiting out. Let's take a look at some of the news across here. It's interesting that I'm seeing one editor's choice on the National Mortgage News. It says Fannie Mae takes $14 billion bailout and the world yawns. Is it really, Joe, that no longer that big an issue?
I think it's just old news. Everyone's anxious to see this all get behind us. But certainly Fannie and Freddie are incurring losses and are going to continue to. Dave, one point in our own local paper here in Austin, there was a big article about MERS this morning. And how it's such an evil thing. And the point of the article was very slanted against MERS and the mortgage industry and all that. And what people forget is prior to MERS, title companies had a difficult time getting clear title because, you know, remember the thrift debacle and all those people were gone and you couldn't get clear title. And to the extent that MERS allows MBS, people get lower interest rates. And so get on my high horse. MERS is a good thing, and so is securitization. We need to help defend that.
We need to keep that alive and well, absolutely. Alice, anything, any headlines in your radar screen?
Well, actually, it was funny because, Joe, on that, it's Texas as a whole, really. There's a big article on that in the National Mortgage News. I'm trying to get my hands on it. They were just talking about that in Texas, going after MERS in a big way. So I would just reiterate what Joe said. I agree. We need to defend MERS as an industry.
We absolutely do. Prophet Doctor, what's on the headlines? Anything that's been catching your eye? Anything you want to kind of bring to our listeners' attention?
Well, I think just listen to Lickin' on Lending every week.
Because if they had, they would have been knowing how to do the call report right the whole time. Boy, I tell you, there is no question. The call report is one of those things that is going to be a big issue for a lot of people out there. Folks, we appreciate you listening in each and every week. Next week is Thanksgiving week. Alice will be hosting the show, and we'll be having special guests on. Go to the website, lickinonlending.com. You'll see all the notes about future and upcoming programs. We appreciate you being a part of the program each and every week and ask that you pass the word around. Tell your state association. We love coming and talking to your associations about all these issues and that we talk about here on the radio program. And by all means, also, go out and connect up with the Campus MBA production webinar that we're doing tomorrow and the week after. And we've got
four or five more yet to go. So go to the Campus MBA website. Appreciate you being with us. Have a great week, and we look forward to talking to you next week, folks.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.